Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Our mission today is to cut through some of the noise around handling tension and conflict.
Right.
And we're not talking about running away from it, but actually leaning in.
Mm.
We're doing a deep dive into this really powerful philosophy that uses jazz music as a metaphor.
I love this metaphor.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
The basic idea is that conflict isn't a breakdown. It's actually the very condition you need to find a deeper, more resilient kind of harmony.
It's a fundamental shift in perspective, isn't it? I mean, most of us are conditioned to see misalignment as a failure.
Exactly. A failure.
Whether it's in a relationship, a project at work, or even just in your own head. But what if that tension, that dissonance, is actually the launch pad for your next breakthrough?
That is the core of it. We're zeroing in on this insight from the legendary trumpet player Miles Davis.
Yes.
And the idea, as our source material puts it, is this. It's not the note. It's the next note you play after the note that's dissonant. That really matters.
And that one phrase, the note after the dissonant note, it just immediately gives you a roadmap, a universal one.
It really does.
It pulls our focus away from the mistake, you know, the moment of tension, and puts it squarely on the response.
The conscious response.
Yes, it moves us right away from conflict avoidance to conflict navigation.
So the goal is accepting that the mistake, the misstep, the moment of snippiness, it's going to happen. It's inevitable.
Right.
The true skill is in the recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's unpack this for a second. For anyone listening who isn't a musician, imagine you're playing a piece of music, right? A beautiful, predictable chord progression, and then clang. Clang. You hit a note that just doesn't belong. It grates. It creates this tension.
And that tension is immediate. It's almost physical. Most people, their first instinct is panic. I messed up. I failed the piece.
Yeah, I ruined it.
But a skilled improviser sees that wrong note as a tool. If they immediately resolve that note, say, downward into the scale, well, that tension doesn't just vanish. It transforms.
It transforms into what? Exactly.
Into a purposeful moment.
Oh, interesting. Is it the breath you hold right before surprise, or that moment of discomfort before a necessary conversation?
Exactly that. The dissonance gives it a dramatic inflection point. It suddenly has a function.
So it stops being wrong and becomes intentional.
It becomes a point of momentary tension that leads to a richer, more satisfying resolution. The whole composition gets deeper because it navigated that strain.
And the alternative is what?
If you play that wrong note and then follow it with another random note and then another, that's when you get chaos. That's just an unresolved mess. So you see, the dissonance wasn't the problem. The problem was the lack of intention in the notes that followed.
So the skill is recognizing the dissonant note for what it is, a signal, and then having the discipline to choose the next note instead of just scrambling.
And that leads us directly to the first essential step, which one of our sources, Rachel, calls witnessing.
Witnessing. Okay.
She described it as an embodied capacity for witness and observation. You have to create just a little bit of space between the stimulus and the response.
So before you can resolve anything, you have to just notice it.
You have to notice it. You have to register, oh, that was dissonant, or I am feeling triggered right now. And then you can consciously choose a response instead of just reacting.
So witnessing is basically moving out of the amygdala, the fight or flight reactive part of the brain.
Right.
And into the prefrontal cortex, the part that can observe and think strategically. You're literally watching yourself experience the dissonance.
That's the space. That's where the next note gets chosen. Without that capacity for witness, we're just playing whatever panic tells us to play.
Yeah.
With it, we get to choose the note that resolves the tension.
Okay, this brings us to a really important point. We need to challenge this. This deeply ingrained idea that harmony is good and dissonance is bad.
It's a trap, a dualistic trap.
It is. It prevents us from growing. I mean, if you spend your whole life avoiding dissonance, you're avoiding information. You're avoiding necessary change.
And it sets us up for these impossible standards. We're always striving for this static, perfect harmony, which just, it doesn't exist. Not in human systems.
No.
Rachel introduced this beautiful term for it, implicit harmony.
Implicit harmony. I love that.
It's not the harmony you can hear. It's the harmony you trust. It's that foundational trust that allows for temporary, messy disagreement without the fear that the whole thing is going to collapse.
Like the example of a pilgrimage from the sources. You have a group of people. They all share one intention.
Mm-hmm.
Reach the destination.
Right.
That shared intention, that's the implicit harmony.
But even with that strong implicit harmony, you're still going to get dissonance. People are human. Somebody gets hungry and snaps. Somebody wants to quit.
Someone's body breaks down.
The shared goal doesn't just erase individual reality. So the central question for you, for the listener, stops being, how do we prevent tension? And it starts being, when tension appears, how do we reliably get back to harmony?
Which brings us to this core harmony dissonance cycle.
Yeah.
I think this is such a powerful framework. We should detail these four stages so you can recognize where you are in the cycle at any given time.
Okay, so stage one is harmony. Things feel aligned, they're easeful, coherent, a team meeting that's flowing, a peaceful dinner at home.
You know it when you feel it.
You do. Stage two is dissonance arises. Tension, conflict, misalignment. The wrong note gets played. This is inevitable, and crucially, it's not a sign of failure.
And that leads to stage three, the choice point. This is the critical moment. You've got two options here, and the outcome of the whole system rests on this decision.
Hmm.
Option A is the panic reaction.
Yeah.
You resist the dissonance, you try to shut it down, or you try to force things back to what you think harmony should look like.
And we all know why that makes things worse, right? Because resistance creates friction. It's like trying to force a square peg into a round hole. You just break the container, you create secondary dissonance. Now you have tension about the tension, you make it personal.
So the wise choice is option B. You witness it, you observe the dissonance, and you just allow it to exist for a moment. You create space around it.
You don't try to fix it instantly, you just acknowledge it's there.
And that choice creates the conditions for a natural resolution.
Which brings us to stage four, return to harmony. The tension releases. Not because you forced it, but because you let the necessary information move through. The real mastery isn't staying in harmony forever.
No.
The mastery is getting good and fast at returning to harmony after dissonance shows up.
I love that. The skill is not perfection, it's recovery.
Hmm.
But what if the disagreement is so fundamental that there's no sheet music to go back to? You know? What if you're navigating a situation where the structure itself is being created in real time? That brings us to the highest level of this, which is free jazz.
Yes. Free jazz is the ultimate test of this whole principle. To the untrained ear, it can sound like, well, like total chaos.
Right, because they're improvising without any predetermined chords or melody. It's complete musical freedom.
So if there are no rules, no structure, how on earth do they make it coherent? How is it not just noise?
That's the question.
They find an invisible thread of listening. That's the key. They are hyper-attentive to what everyone else is playing. The success of free jazz depends entirely on the musicians trusting each other's commitment to the music.
So even though they can play anything,
they know they're all committed to creating something together.
That shared intention. That's the implicit harmony again. That's the container.
It is. As our sources put it, the musicians operate from a place of, we know the next note together, or we're going to the next note together. They listen so deeply that they can respond constructively to even the most outrageous choice.
In an organization, that's everything. A healthy team culture is free jazz.
It really is.
People are allowed to play dissonant ideas, to challenge the process, because the underlying intention is known. We're all trying to make this project succeed.
The dissonance is welcomed because the foundational trust is solid. Without that shared goal, free jazz is just noise. With it, it's this profound, spontaneous conversation.
Okay, so let's take this incredible musical theory and bring it right down to earth. Applied dissonance. Conflict navigation.
Mm.
One of the biggest insights here is that the word conflict itself, just, it carries too much negative baggage. Fighting, dysfunction, the end of a relationship.
But if we use the jazz metaphor, conflict is just information.
Yes.
It's telling you very clearly that something is out of alignment. If you can witness it without labeling it bad or wrong, you can extract that information, adjust, and come back to harmony from a deeper, more informed place.
Let's use a really concrete example. The difference between conflict avoidance and conflict navigation in a relationship. Say, one partner is being snippy or short-tempered.
Okay, so conflict avoidance looks like ignoring the snippiness. You're polite on the surface, but you're swallowing that dissonant note.
Pretending it didn't happen.
Right, and that quietly builds resentment and distrust. The emotional debt just racks up. Hmm. And eventually, that ignored dissonance. It breaks the composition. You get an explosion or just a slow drift apart.
Okay, so now conflict navigation.
Yeah.
This is applying the Miles Davis principle.
Right.
First, you notice the dissonance. Wow, we are dissonant right now. They're being short and I'm feeling defensive.
Then you use witnessing to create space. You say, hey, can we talk about what's happening? You witness without blame. I notice I've been a little short and you seem distant. Something feels off.
And then you listen for the underlying signal, the information. Maybe it's not about the dirty dishes at all.
Never is.
Maybe the signal is, we're both running on 4 hours of sleep and we're totally exhausted.
Or I feel really unsupported right now.
And finally, you adjust based on that new information. Maybe you cancel a plan, agree to a quiet night in, and you return to harmony. The relationship is restored because the dissonance was allowed to communicate something vital.
And this really does require that embodied capacity for witness. You can't just think your way out of this.
No.
If you try to fix a conflict just from your head, you'll just be performing resolution. You have to be in your body, feeling the tension, noticing your tight shoulders, tracking whether the resolution feels like a genuine relief or just a performance.
That brings us to this deep synthesis, this kind of ultimate both-and conclusion. Rachel said, I feel like we're dancing, we're doing a little free jazz, but we're also harmonizing at the same time, like both are possible.
That's the core both-and theme. It's not harmony or dissonance. It is both, yeah, in a constant dynamic cycle. The point isn't to find some perfect static harmony.
It's about being skilled enough to work with whatever comes up.
Exactly, whether it's structured or completely free.
She introduced this wonderful concept, an inflection point, as a space of coalescing. I think this is a key takeaway for anyone listening.
Mm-hmm.
It's a space where things start to come back together. And that coalescence could be more or less harmonious.
Which gives us permission for imperfection.
Yes. If the next note is still a little bit dissonant, that's okay. It's just more data, and you adjust again.
And how do we approach that data without getting crushed by the tension?
With lightness.
With lightness. The suggestion to clown around a little bit. Clowns are masters of creating dissonance, of interruption, but they always find their way back with this unexpected delight. With playfulness.
Playfulness is the lubricant of navigation. It just lowers the stakes of the conflict, lets you see it as less personal and more like a puzzle to solve together.
You can see this lightness in that final anecdote from the sources with the coconut yogurt.
The full circle moment.
Yeah. Someone offers the yogurt to the father. He likes it. That's harmony. Then the mother says, take it back. That's dissonance. Both responses are valid.
The dissonance isn't a catastrophe.
It's just information that requires a small adjustment.
Exactly. Harmony and dissonance coexisting moment to moment. It's the response to her reaction, the note after the dissonant note, that defines what happens next.
Do they get defensive?
Yeah.
Or do they just accept it? Okay, she doesn't like the coconut yogurt. What did?
The profound lesson they modeled is that implicit harmony. Sometimes it's structured, sometimes it's free jazz, but they're always trusting that shared intention to find the next note together.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener?
The wisdom of this deep dive is, I think, really clear. The dissonant note creates tension, it creates interest, and it creates the conditions for a beautiful resolution.
Mm.
But only if you know what to do next.
Mm.
The way back to harmony isn't by forcing it or avoiding the conflict in the first place.
It's through witnessing and allowing. It's about trusting that if you can stay present and just move from panic to observation, the path back will reveal itself. The dissonance isn't a mistake, it's information that guides your recovery.
So here's my final provocative thought for you to carry forward this week. Where in your life are you experiencing dissonance right now?
Hmm.
That project that feels off, that relationship that's tense, that internal state that just feels chaotic.
Hmm.
Instead of trying to fix it immediately or shut it down,
mm-hmm.
Can you just witness it?
Just observe it.
Can you observe it without judgment? Can you trust that the next note, the one that brings you back to a deeper harmony, will emerge if you just give it space to breathe? Maybe that dissonance is telling you exactly what you needed to know to grow.
We'll leave you with this final thought from the poet Rumi, translated by Coleman Barks, which I think just, it sums up the freedom in moving beyond that judgment.
Mm.
Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there.
That field.
Yeah.
That's the space of implicit harmony. It's where dissonance and alignment are just data. It's the space where you can play the wrong note without shame and find your way back to coherence without forcing it. It's where you can dance and harmonize at the same time. Thank you for diving deep with us.